So it's the fourth Sunday of Lent, and if you've given something up or you've taken something up, hang with it, stick with it. This is where it gets hard, if it hasn't gotten hard already. But as a community, we're giving up and taking up. And one of the things we've taken up is reading through Matthew. And we've been following Jesus through Matthew and sort of like the disciples, almost following along to see what he came to do and what he was all about. And today we're going to look at another story. And I need to admit right up front, it's a really difficult story that we're going to read today. It raises all kinds of questions that I'm not sure I have great answers for. And this isn't one of those tricks where it's like, it raises all kinds of questions for you, but I've got all the answers, and by the end of the sermon, I'm going to give them to you, and then you'll go home. That's kind of like a preacher trick, and I'm not going to pull that today. Like, it raises questions for me that I'm not sure I've got. I mean, I've got some answers and thoughts, but I'm not sure they're the best ones or they're the right ones. In fact, more than once over the last month and a half, I've thought about not doing this story and preaching on a different story. So as we're going through Lent, we're reading this book together, and we've just been picking one of the stories from the previous weeks and sort of diving deeper into that. And I picked this like 2 months ago, and more than once, I've looked ahead and thought, I should just pick a different story. Like, let's just do something different this morning. And there's this little voice, I think it's the Holy Spirit, that keeps saying, no, this is the one I led you to, and if you're struggling with it, let's just all struggle with it and wrestle with it together. So, with all of that in mind, here's the context. Jesus has gathered these disciples, and he's asked them to follow him. And he said that I have this life that I want to offer you, this life in God's kingdom, and you don't understand fully what that means, but I'm going to show you what it means and you can begin to experience it. And so he goes around and begins showing people what it means. And the context of the story we're going to read today is that one day Jesus comes along and he feeds thousands of people with just a few loaves of bread and a few fish. And it's this miraculous thing. And then right after that, Matthew tells us that Jesus walks on the water. They're going across the lake in a boat, and Jesus starts walking in the water, and then he invites Peter to start walking on the water. And then right after that, Jesus heals another woman, and then he feeds another crowd miraculously. And then Jesus is with his disciples, and he says to his disciples, have you figured out like who I am yet? And one of them, Peter, says, yes, you're the Messiah. You're the one that we've been waiting for. And Jesus says, yes, like you're beginning to understand and believe and see what I'm all about. And then there's one more story where Jesus takes three of his disciples and he goes up on this mountaintop. And it's this strange sort of glorious experience where like white light shines down and God reveals both to Jesus, if Jesus didn't already know, but certainly the disciples, who Jesus really is and why God has sent Jesus and what he is called to do. And it's like this pinnacle experience. And it really is the pinnacle of Jesus's ministry because finally he understands and the disciples understand what he is called to do and what he has come to be about. Now, before we read what happens next, you might be here, and there's a lot of miracles that have already happened and all these sort of healings and things. And you might think, I just don't believe that. I don't buy that. That's why I don't read the Bible. Or those are the parts of the Bible that I kind of cut out or I ignore because they're strange and they're odd. And I'm with you. Like, there's stories I read that I don't fully understand. But here's what I'd like for you to try to do today if you're skeptical about those parts of the Bible. It's to just set it aside a little bit, and not forever. Like, they're good questions to ask, but at least for today, pretend that you're following this guy. And he begins doing some things you see with your eyes and you experience, but you just can't explain. You don't have the language or the words to explain, and it draws you in deeper to want to understand what is going on here. And so with all of that, Jesus comes down from the mountain, and he comes down from this glorious experience, and look at what happens in Matthew 17, starting in verse 14. When they came to the crowd, a man approached Jesus and knelt before him. So this random man shows up, and he's probably heard Jesus and knows him because he clearly has respect for him. He bows down and kneels before Jesus, and look at what he says. Lord, have mercy on my son, he said. He has seizures, and he's suffering greatly. He often falls into the fire or into the water, and I brought him to your disciples, but they could not heal him. So this man has a son, and we're told that he's afflicted with these seizures. And we don't have a ton of background. We don't know what's going on. We don't know if he's had these seizures all his life. Mark gives a version of this story as well. And Mark says there's some other physical things going on. And so we don't know if this is a disease. We don't know if it's something like epilepsy. We don't know if there's been recent trauma in his life and that's caused these seizures. We don't know if it's complicated by other things physically in his body. But he is afflicted with them. And it is debilitating. It's uncontrollable. It's dangerous. And it's like it's tormenting him. And so the man, the father, brings his son to Jesus. And he says, would you show mercy on him? He needs your mercy. Would you just do something that would be an act of your mercy? And by the way, Jesus, you are gone, and I saw some of your disciples, and so I brought him to your disciples, and they thought what he needed was healing, and so they tried to heal him, and they couldn't do it. Now, I've never had a seizure. I've never even really had anything that physically debilitating or uncontrollable in my life. Lauren Molnar, who's a part of our community, you might know her, and she's awesome and amazing if you haven't gotten a chance to know her. Lauren has epilepsy, and this is her life. Like, this is what she deals with. She developed it when she was about 15 years old, and for the last decade or so of her life, this is what she's lived with, these kinds of seizures. And she goes through good seasons, she goes through bad seasons. But if you know Lauren, or you've sort of helped her, or know her experience, or you've talked with her, you know it is a horrible, debilitating affliction. And so I read about this man in this story, and I think about Lauren, or I think about countless others who are dealing with other kinds of physical illnesses or afflictions. And the question that's raised is obviously, God, why don't you heal them? Well, why are there some people, and why am I not one of them, but why are there some people that have for a good part of their life, or maybe their entire lives, had to deal with things like this, and you haven't healed them? Why do some people suffer this way and God doesn't heal them? And I don't know the answer to that question. I know that when Jesus was on earth, he did heal lots and lots of people. And I also know that the people he healed from physical diseases, their physical diseases weren't actually their fault. That it wasn't because they didn't have a disease or some sort of affliction because of something they had done. They didn't have some secret sin they were paying for. It wasn't as if God was punishing them by giving them or allowing them to have this disease in their life. In fact, one day Jesus actually meets a man and he addresses this very issue. Look at this story. It's in John chapter 3. It says, as Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind? Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus. But this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. In other words, it's not his fault. And it's not his parents' fault. And I know you want to point the blame somewhere. And I know you want to like find the reason or the cause of this happened. And you think that it's some sin or something. But it's not his fault. And it's not his parents' fault. That's not what's going on here. That his blindness is actually just an opportunity for God to shine through him. On another occasion, the Apostle Paul experienced some sort of affliction in his life. And he doesn't get specific and tell us what happened. We think it was probably some sort of physical disease. We know that he had problems with his eyes. We know that on occasions he said that he wasn't attractive at all, and there was something about him that turned people off sort of visually or from, and so maybe there's something that was going on. But we also know that he says something he came down with began to torment him. It had that level of sort of debilitation in his life. And he prayed that God would take it away. He prayed that God would heal him. And God didn't heal him. Instead, look at what God said. And this is what Paul writes in a letter to 2 Corinthians. God said this to him, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." That even in your weakness, Paul, even in this affliction that you have, I can give you my grace that will sustain you. And I can even perfect my strength and my glory. And I can shine through this weakness that you have. I spent some time a week or so ago talking to Lauren about all of this. And I asked her, like, how do you process this in your life? Like, what does this look like? Because you deal with this every day. I don't. And you think about these questions about healing and God and all those things every day. And do you know what she said to me? She said, "God has used my epilepsy to help me minister to others. And I don't know why God hasn't healed me, but he continues to use it to let me minister to others." And I think, like, could there be any greater example of someone saying, God is perfecting his strength through my weakness? Now, if we go back to the story in Matthew for a second, and if we put those verses back up there from Matthew, here's what's interesting. The issue isn't whether God is healing him or not. The issue is, why couldn't the disciples heal him? Because the man comes to Jesus and he says, "Look, your disciples, they tried to heal. Like, they did all their things. They said all the words and they waved their hands. And then Andrew got in front and he smacked my son on the head. And then somebody was there to catch him from behind. And the music started playing and everything was going on and none of it worked. Like, they just couldn't heal him." And look at how Jesus responds in the next verse. "You unbelieving and perverse generation," Jesus replied, "how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy here to me." And I love this because it's one of those rare moments where Jesus is kind of ticked off. He's just frustrated. And I love that because I get frustrated at people and at situations. And here's Jesus and he's frustrated. And so they come and he says, and the man says, "Your disciples couldn't heal him." And he just stops. And it's like he's shaking his head thinking, what in the world? And he addresses the crowds now. "You unbelieving and perverse." And we hear perverse and maybe think perverted, but that's not what he's saying. The word in Greek there just means totally misguided. "You unbelieving and totally misguided generation of people." And it's clear that he's starting to direct this at the disciples and that he's including the disciples with the crowds. Like, "I thought you were understanding who I was. I thought you were beginning to believe in me. I thought you had seen my power and all the things I could do. But now I realize you're still just like the crowds. You're still like this unbelieving and totally misunderstanding and misguided generation." And it's like he just stops. He's like, all right, "bring the boy to me and I'll take care of it." And so look at what happens next. Jesus rebuked the demon and it came out of the boy and he was healed at that moment. Now, I told you this was a difficult story. Because Jesus decides to heal the boy, but the way it's described is he doesn't just heal him. He rebukes a demon and drives it out of him. And I want to say, really, Jesus? Really, Matthew? Did you have to include that detail? That what was actually happening here was, is what you're saying, what was actually happening here is demon possession? And what in the world do we do with that? And maybe you're sitting here and when I first read that and you saw that on the screen, you thought, demons, really? I mean, are we still, how in the world are people believing? I mean, it sounds like to me this was a medical affliction, and yet what they're saying is it seems like there was some sort of demon possession. Do people still really believe that? And did they really believe? I mean, did Jesus really believe that? And as a historian, I would say, well, let's back up a second and remember the culture and the context and the worldview. And the answer is like, yeah, they did believe that. Because in that ancient culture and in that ancient worldview, they didn't have medical science and they didn't see things and they didn't understand things the way we did. And they believed there was an unseen spiritual world. And that the source of everything that we didn't understand, the everything that was a mystery, and certainly the source of afflictions in our lives, whatever they are, was coming from this unseen spiritual world. And so it actually makes total sense that this is part of Jesus' understanding and the disciples' understanding and everyone's understanding at the time. In fact, if we were reading this story and they didn't go there, that wouldn't make sense. If we were reading this story and they never mentioned demons or they never mentioned evil spirits or sort of the spiritual world, then that would be odd. That would be strange. In fact, that would mean it was made up hundreds of years later, because everyone in this culture would have seen things through this lens. And yet it still raises all kinds of questions for us. Is Jesus saying, or is the disciples saying, or is Matthew trying to tell us that all illness is caused by demon possession? And I don't think so. Because there's lots of times where Jesus heals people and there's no mention of demons. And there's no mention of like exorcisms or driving a demon out or anything like that. And in fact, there's when the boy who's born blind, Jesus talks to him and there's this long story about him and there's no mention of demons or anything in that situation. So maybe this is a unique case. Maybe there's something specific going on in this boy's life that it's not just physical affliction, but there's also some sort of spiritual affliction. Maybe Jesus saw that and realized that there's something unique happening here. We just don't really know. I mean, obviously the biggest question all this raises before we read on is, well, should we still believe in this? I mean, should we as followers of Jesus, or maybe you're here and you're sort of asking questions or considering being a follower of Jesus, is that what we should believe? I mean, people who know now that there are scientific causes behind all of these things, that there are good scientific reasons that explain all these things, we don't have to just sort of say we don't know and so there must be spiritual forces out there. I mean, shouldn't we just say that's kind of an old, outdated understanding of the world and we should reject that? And maybe that raises questions about the whole Bible, because if that's what they believe and we now know that that's not true, then that raises all kinds of questions about Jesus and everything else we read. Is that what we should say? I don't really know. I'm not sure. But here's what I do know. Whether you are deeply informed by a sort of modern scientific understanding, whatever your worldview is, we would all still say that there are things that afflict us in life. That there are things that make life difficult, that it seems like there are forces of opposition in our world. There's very physical things like epilepsy and cancer and heart disease and fibromyalgia. I mean, we could just name them and go down the list. There are individual and personal things that afflict us. Broken homes that we come from. Wounds that people inflict on us. Deep addictions that put us in sort of the sense of bondage. And even in our very modern and scientific world where we think we understand and know everything, there are systematic and societal things that oppress us. that we still live with racism, and we still live with poverty, and we still live with human trafficking. Who would think in our modern world? I mean, wouldn't we be educated enough, and haven't we learned enough to be able to address all of these issues? But we haven't. We still live with oppression and war and violence and homelessness and all of these things. And so as modern and as scientific as I am personally, and my dad was a doctor, so I sort of grew up that way, and my background is engineering. So the world is like this mechanical universe for me. And I just love the law of thermodynamics. I mean, it is beautiful, right? And the law of gravity and the law of conservation of momentum and the law of conservation of energy and Einstein's theory of special relativity. Like, I could just go on and talk about the beauty and the grace in those things that help us understand how our world works. And yet, even as modern and scientific as I am, I still can't shake the sense that there are forces that are opposed to us as humans living the lives that we're meant to live. And so when Jesus shows up and says, this isn't how it's supposed to be, and I came to defeat those forces and turn them upside down and invite you into a life where you will experience true peace and true life and true healing, I just think that what's important, whether you have sort of a very modern worldview or whether you have an ancient worldview, is that either way you explain it, you still can say there are forces opposing us. And call it the law of entropy or call it spiritual warfare, it doesn't matter. It exists. And Jesus came to defeat those forces and offer us a new way. And so whether it's physical affliction or spiritual affliction or some combination of both, Jesus shows up and he has compassion on this boy. And when the father brings him and says, show your mercy, he has mercy. And it says he heals him. But of course, this raises one more difficult question, because look at how the disciples respond when Jesus heals the boy. It says, then the disciples came to Jesus in private and asked, why couldn't we drive it out? And I love that they came to him in private because they're embarrassed, right? Like, we did everything we could, and why couldn't we drive this demon out? I mean, after all, Jesus had given them the power to do that. We read several weeks ago, Jesus gathered all his disciples and he sent them out and he says, I want you to go tell people about this kingdom just like I've been telling people about the kingdom. And I want you to go heal people just like I've been healing people. And I want you to go drive demons out. And I give you all power and authority to do all the same things that I've been doing. And so what in the world, Jesus? You gave us the power and authority and you said we could do it. And we tried, like we did everything we could, and we couldn't do it. Look at how Jesus responds. He replied, because you have so little faith. Truly, I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. So the issue, Jesus just says to him really bluntly, is faith. He just didn't have enough. You didn't have enough faith. Now, this statement can be incredibly misused and abused. Lauren told me that people have come up to her before and said the reason that you still have epilepsy and that God hasn't healed you is because you don't have enough faith. And I said, did you immediately punch them in the face? Because I know Jesus is all about nonviolence, but I think he would have given you a pass on that one. Because not only is that one of the most insensitive things you could ever say, it's just flat out wrong. Because who does Jesus say doesn't have enough faith? Does he say it to the boy who has seizures? No. Does he say it to the father who's coming and asking for mercy? No. In fact, not once, I went through the gospel accounts this week, and I might have missed one, but I read through them all, and I couldn't find a single instance where Jesus actually says to the person who is being afflicted or to the people who are bringing the person who is afflicted to Jesus, not once does he say to them that they don't have enough faith. In fact, more often than not, he praises their faith. He looks at them and he says, you've come to me for mercy and you recognize I'm the person that can give it and you're trusting me with it. In fact, oftentimes people would come to him and say, I believe you can heal. It's up to you if you want to heal. And Jesus would stand back and say, if only others would have the kind of faith that you have. Never once does Jesus chastise the people that are coming to him and asking for healing or deliverance. But you know who he does chastise? The disciples. They're the ones that Jesus over and over and over is saying, you still don't get it, do you? You still don't have the faith to understand what's going on. In fact, in the book of Matthew alone, this is the sixth time that Jesus has said to the disciples, you still don't have enough faith. You're still not understanding. You still don't get it. You've seen me do miracle after miracle after miracle. You've seen it. You've experienced it. You've seen me teaching about it. And somehow you still don't see the bigger picture. Maybe they thought it was all a show. We don't know. Maybe they begin to reduce it to a transaction. Well, Jesus just kind of says some things and prays some things. And it's, you know, and then we can go out and do that. And the crowds are going to think it's amazing. And it's almost as if Jesus is saying, no, you're still missing the bigger picture. You still don't have true faith. Now, true faith is not complete faith. It's not total faith. It's not a faith that lacks any doubt whatsoever. In fact, you remember what Jesus said. He said, all you needed was a mustard seed of faith. You didn't need a lot. Just a tiny bit would have done it. In fact, Mark adds one detail to the story that I want to read because it's so important. Because when Jesus comes and he heals the boy, before he does that, he looks at the father. And in Mark's version, he looks at the father and he basically says, do you have faith? Do you believe I can do this? And look at what the father says in Mark 9. Immediately, the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. I do believe Jesus. Now, I still have all kinds of questions about how it works and what it means and whether you actually are going to heal my son or not. So there's all kinds of places in my faith that are not formed yet and that are not perfect and that are not total and comprehensive. But I've got like this much. I've got enough to believe you could do it if you wanted to. And Jesus says, that's enough. That's enough. So true faith doesn't mean having this total, sort of comprehensive, absolute, full faith. And it doesn't mean that you believe God always will heal. Only that God could heal. Because we know that God doesn't always heal, right? He didn't heal Paul. And we know there's lots of people that he hasn't chosen to heal. We don't know why, but we know that he has his own purposes and his own way. But we do know that he has said his grace is always enough and his grace will sustain us. And that even when he chooses not to heal, part of the reason he does it is because he can shine through our weakness and he can perfect his strength in our weakness. And so true faith doesn't mean that we just sort of pray a prayer and we say the thing and we just assume God's going to do it every time. And it's almost like a vending machine. You just put your, you know, little faith in and out's going to come the healing. You know, maybe that's what the disciples had done. Maybe it had just become a transaction for them. And Jesus says that's not faith. True faith is taking the situation and handing it over to God. And entrusting him with it. And believing that yes, all things are possible with God. And God can heal. And God can do it like that. In fact, one person who comes to Jesus one time says, would you heal my servant? And Jesus says, yeah, I'm open to doing it. Do you want me to come to your house? And the guy's like, no, just snap your fingers and say it and it'll be done. And Jesus is like, oh, that's faith. Like, you just believe, you know, all things are possible with God. Now, that doesn't mean all things that are illogical are possible, right? God, can you make me a rock? No, that's illogical. Like, that's not possible. God, can you change the past? No, the past has already happened. This phrase, like, all things are possible with God, we have to, you know, we can't take that to the extreme. And it also is this sense of all things are possible with God within his purposes and within his will. So Jesus comes before the cross and he basically prays to his Father, Father, is there another way? Because I don't want to do this. Is there another way? And the Father says, this is the way. My grace will be enough for you. My strength, my power, and my salvation of humanity will take place through your weakness and your suffering. And so true faith is following the model of Jesus and bringing whatever situation you have, yourself or someone else, to Jesus and entrusting them to him, like that father, and saying, we need your mercy here, Jesus. And if that means that you'll heal, then great. We will praise and we will worship you for it. And we will believe that that's how you are overcoming the forces of darkness in this world, by doing some sort of supernatural healing right here and right now. And if you choose not to heal, but instead give your grace and your mercy throughout this and display your strength through weakness, then we will believe that this is also how you're overcoming the forces of darkness in our world. And we'll trust in that. So we believe in you enough to bring ourselves and to bring this person to you. And in all the other places where we have a hard time believing, help us overcome our unbelief. So here's the question I want to close with this morning. What do you need to bring to Jesus? Maybe it's yourself. Maybe it's a situation in your life. Maybe it's another person. Maybe it's a spouse or parent or son, like this story, or daughter. Maybe it's a friend. Who is it that you're bringing to Jesus? And maybe you're even like the disciples and you're saying to Jesus, Jesus, we did everything we could and we can't fix her. We can't fix him. I'm realizing I can't fix myself. And maybe I should have realized that a long time ago and come to you first, but I've been trying to fix myself and we've been trying to fix him and we've been trying to fix her and we've been trying to fix the situation, but we can't do it. And so now we're at the place where we realize we haven't fully entrusted you with it. And so we're just bringing it to you now. We're bringing them to you now, and we're going to trust that you'll deal with them. And that could mean your healing in certain, some ways, and that could mean your grace in other ways, but we're going to entrust you with it. Who or what do you need to bring to Jesus today and say, Jesus, I believe, but I also need you to help me overcome my unbelief. Let me pray. Father God, we want to have a humble faith, the faith of this Father who loved his Son so much and saw the suffering he was experiencing and brought him to you. God, give us the faith that we need to bring ourselves and to bring others to you this morning, and to know that we don't have all the answers. We don't see the bigger picture the way you do. And so we don't know what the right solution or what the right outcome is. We need and we want to trust you with that. Help us to trust you with that today. I pray this in your name. Amen.